Pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker from Lemoore with 37 years of sobriety. Let's give it up for Monique H.
Oh boy. Hello, everybody. My name is Monique, and I am an alcoholic. It is a pleasure to be here. I want to thank Bill for asking me. I've been here before, and I listened to that last talk, and I was all over the board. I just want to qualify, just say that I am an alcoholic. I am not a circuit speaker, but my job is to really share my experience, strength, and hope, and so that I can do. I was back there just moved by, by the birthdays and the young lady who had a year, and just I had no idea that was going to happen. And when they asked me how long, my sobriety date is 9/19/81. So we were back here doing the math, because to tell you the truth, I have no idea. And then it was there that I really was moved by the grace of God, because I realized that God's love won't take you where His grace won't keep you. I'm not, not holding on to years. It's a day at a time. And I do remember being told that if you got up before I did, then you have more sobriety than I do. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's why I was really moved. It has been a journey, and one that is really, really worth talking about. And this just reminds me, I've been spending my time in a lot of other places lately because the program has afforded me that opportunity. You get to have a life, as they say in Southern California, beyond your wildest drunken dreams. Before I got here, my life was limited to pretty much work and going to the liquor store and going home and getting drunk and going to work and going to the liquor store and going home and getting drunk. My radius was really like a 4-block. I don't know about you all, but, towards the end of my drink, I drank from 12 to 20. And so I like to say I was a teenage drunk. And by the time I was introduced to alcohol, 12 was like, oh, my God, where have you been? I grew up in an alcoholic family. My stepfather was an alcoholic, a rageaholic. And my mother, I'm 4 out of 5 kids. And so by the time she married him, she was kind of desperate. And so, and there was comments around the fact that no one would really marry a woman with 4 children. So I'm not quite sure how that went. I was a baby. But all I know is that he was an alcoholic. And most of the time, even though there were a lot of good qualities about him, most of the time I spent that early childhood really petrified about, what I was going to come home to. I'm also the product of domestic violence. That stepfather was a rageaholic, alcoholic, wife beater. And so I remember when the 4 of us would, be in the living room, and it was every weekend he got drunk. Every weekend, and every weekend I was petrified. I remember, I'm going to try to clean up my language too, because I have a pretty potty mouth. But I used to wet the bed more out of, just neurosis. It's just I was too scared. I was just, when you grow up like in an alcoholic family, I heard the speaker I was listening to coming over here say that you just kind of learn how to shut down. And that's how I live. I was just shut down. We come home and they would have a fight, or he would beat my mom, and all we would hear, I'll never forget that. Man, I was so little, my feet didn't even hit the ground, but she's in the room just getting tossed around, and she'd be, and as a girl, as the youngest of the family, I was just scared that, is he killing her, And so, and I remember my oldest brother, trying to comfort us as we would just hear her just get terrorized. And so, I used to suck my fingers as comfort, And I remember one time, you know, she came and she said to me that, Monique, you know, I won't give you a good night kiss if you don't stop sucking your fingers tonight. My fingers were my security. It's like, God damn, I ain't sucking my damn fingers. You know, I pull my hair today. I'm a hair puller today. You know, just like, you know, Philip, my husband back there. You know, would you quit pulling your hair? I'm still neurotic. The difference is that with this program, you know, I don't have to drink. So anyway, just petrified. And so by the time I was introduced to alcohol at 12, it was my salvation. You know, let me tell you this. Everything I'm spending tonight is a direct result of this program. Nothing I say is original. Spoon fed. Thank you, God. One day at a time, AA program. That's how I got it. And so I really want to just say that right now. A compilation of all of you into me. And hopefully I just give you a little bit of me into you. And so, I was introduced to alcohol at 12 by what I think is an alcoholic aunt, because I'm thinking, what other person is going to give a kid? I don't know. Maybe that's normal. But give a kid a beer. And I sipped beers before, you know, and my dad would leave drinks around, and I would take a little bit, just wondering, what was curious about, what is it in this that, you know, drew them to this? And so when she gave my brother and I, who's also, I'm going to say, a future member of this program, he tickles me because he's still a practicing alcoholic, and he calls himself a functional drunk. When me and Phil listen to that, we just bust up laughing, you know, because it's like he's functioning all right, you know. He functions by going to a liquor store, buying a drink, passing out, and getting up again. That's how he functions, you know. But I let him go. At least he's moved over into alcoholism. He used to just be a child of God, so he's making some progress. So anyway... So she gave my brother and I a beer. And, you know, we do have the same dad out of all the five kids. He and I have the same dad. I'm telling you, we also have the same gene pool. I used to say that I was born an alcoholic. And I really don't know that I was or wasn't. But I do know this. When I took my first drink, an alcoholic was born. Oh, my. Isn't that something? And that's something. An alcoholic was born. She gave us that beer, and I remember thinking, should I take this over someplace in a corner and drink it? Your first drink? How do you know these things? It's like I savored that. And it was Coors, which as later on became water in the can to me, because as I progressed, you know, I moved over to Old English. They said, that gets you drunk faster, give it to me. So, and it was 12 ounces. Later on, I learned there were 16, so she really didn't give us much. But, you know, I was excited about that. I drank Spinata. I don't even know if Spinata's still around. I drank Spinata, you know, and I remember thinking this elixir was just... It was just wonderful. So it was the first time in my life that I felt like I could tolerate, let's be clear, tolerate living in this body. I'm going to kind of go back and forth between when I first got here. I will tell you that when I first got here, I would have traded places with anyone. My life was intolerable by me, unmanageable by me. And through this program, one day at a time, you know, I wouldn't cherry places with anyone, you know. So I took that first drink and, you know, and just kind of ran around, felt lightheaded, just wonderful. But somehow I knew that if I drank the way I wanted to, that I would not be able to take care of other business. That alcohol just became priority number one instantly. Instantly. I never drank socially. I'm trying to clean up a little bit. I never drank socially. I always, always, always drank to get drunk. And when blackouts came, that was even better. And don't tell me what I did in the blackout. That's the beauty of a blackout. We don't want to know, you know? So, I was 12, like I said. I was always a good student. I'm going to just say why I was a good student. It wasn't because I enjoyed school, but because of my alcoholic upbringing, school was an escape. So I was also the great black hope in my family. I was the smart one, and I was the one that was going to kind of bring us out of whatever it was that we were in. And I remember thinking, look, all I'm trying to do is get a damn A. You know, I'm just trying to go to school. I can't carry everybody. And so I knew also, statistically speaking, that just as an African-American woman, girl, the expectations weren't very high for me to be much of anything. So the only thing that my family kind of had in terms of the measure of success was just finish high school. You know, all this, just finish high school. You finish high school, you're doing great. So I knew that if I drank the way I wanted to, that it would interfere with my school. And in fact, I will tell you that at some point in time, around 13 or 14, my mom had had enough and they were getting a divorce. And even though I was petrified all the time, he was still the only man that I knew as dad. This is my story. And I remember also being, you know, when they first met, that hearing all the rumors again that, you know, he ain't gonna come back with this woman with all these kids. He's never gonna come back, you know. And I remember thinking to myself that, you know, if this man comes home tonight, I don't care how he and my mother fight. I don't care what anybody else thinks about him. I said, if he comes home tonight, he's my daddy, you know. And so when he came home that night, I said, hi, daddy. And he began to cry. And my brothers, I wasn't a sister yet, my brothers always kind of looked to me as, I don't know why, they still do. You know, you would think I'm the oldest in the family, and I'm really not. I told you I'm number four, but I do think gender plays a role. I think they say that black women spoil their sons and raise their daughters, and I was the firstborn girl. So they followed me. Everybody began to call him dad, but I knew enough again, too, that as a black family, most, based on the report, most of the families were single mothers. And this man came back. Hi, daddy, because I need me a daddy, you know. And I really mean that, too, that a lot of times in just in what we hear, folks get a bad rap and all that. But I say to my, there's a reason why there's a mother and a father. And yes, I did need a daddy. So anyway, and when we moved to Carson, I am from Los Angeles, by the way. And so we came up. We were the Jeffersons. You know, he was a hard worker. That's the other thing. He would get drunk as heck on the weekend. And Monday morning, he would wake up and go to work every day. I remember, how did he do that? How did he do that? And I can tell you that that ethic he instilled in me. I was like, he is up. And what he also, and he did need an alarm clock. He never needed an alarm. He would just get up and go to work. I was just like, I know he was just drunk last night. How did he do this? And what he said about not needing an alarm clock, he said, well, if it's important to you, you'll get up. Damn. Guess who does not need an alarm clock to get up today? Shit. And when I do, trust me, I must be tired. And I still, knowing I said it, still inevitably wake up before the alarm. Thank you, Paul. So anyway, we moved to Carson, and this is the 60s. You can do the math on how old I am. I ain't gonna tell you, but you can do the math anyway. And so that's why I hate that damn sobriety question. I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Oh, well, the only thing I can hold out on is my weight. So anyway, we moved to Carson. And my mom asked us, she said to me, she said, well, Monique, what last name do you want to use? Now, I also knew I had a biological father. And so this is me. I just kind of want to set the stage of who I am. I've always been real. In that time, really, blended families were becoming, but they really weren't acceptable. It was like some kind of something wrong with you if you were a blended family. Thank God the Brady Bunches came on later to kind of make it okay, you know. So when we got to school, you know, and it was always he was going to adopt us and all this, but at the same time, you know, again, these are the stories you hear as a kid. I just wanted to know who my daddy was. Mother, I know it ain't Paul. Who was my dad? And when she introduced me to him, and are you guys following me with this? Okay. When she introduced me to him, I knew it was him. I was wondering about her. I don't look like her, but I knew it was him. So, you know, and so when we got to school, she said, you know, what last name do you want to use? And I got to thinking, you know, Paul is our father. He's our dad, and he's raising us. And thank you, Paul. Thank you for that. Harvey is the biological why I'm here. Thank you, Harvey. So, I'm going to take my last name. My last name is Hall. Here comes my little brother. He's following me. He takes on Hall, too. And I've been Hall ever since. I am married. But what's my last name, Phil? That's right. Oh, my God. Woo! And that's back to that other point. I would have traded places with anybody, and now I am Monique Hall all the way through. How about that? How about that? This program, I tell you. So anyway, I was Hall, went to school, did that whole thing. 14, they were getting a divorce. I was L.A. student, mainly A's, 4 A's, 2 B's, something like that. You know, I wasn't trying to be an A student. I just wanted to graduate high school, tell you the truth. And so they were getting a divorce, and I did not have any expression. You know, in the alcoholic family, there's 3 rules. Don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. Don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. I was very good at not feeling. Alcohol helped me with that. We had a counselor there in junior high school. I forgot her name. I remembered it at one point, but I forgot it. African American, very significant, because it's important to see you in different positions. And so this was a black counselor who was very popular with us black kids. I'd never been in her office, but you know, ooh, we got a black counselor at this school. This is a big deal, because let me tell you, when we moved to Carson, it was predominantly white. This was 1967, but I was telling Phil just the other day, I'm also part of that white flight. When the black people came, the white people left, you know? I remember the first time I remember, you know, when we moved out there was Carla, who had long blonde hair, and I remember touching Carla's hair thinking, my God, look at this hair, you know. And she was the only child, and she was so nice, and our house was quiet. It's like, oh, I stayed at Carla's house, and her, much to the chagrin of her dad, you know. And so, God, here she comes again. Anyway, but I was a good kid. But next thing I know, Carla was gone. You know what I mean? Woo! I'm like, what happened to Carla? They said she moved, you know. So, shit. Anyway. So to see this black counselor was really just significant. It was like, you know, we got some status here, right? And so I forgot her name, but she called me in the office because I went from all A's to all F's. I didn't realize that was significant. That was just like the thing you did. I mean, because of the breakup of the family. And I couldn't put my finger on, you know, why. I just knew I was hurt because I'm shut down, right? I'm shut down. You know, you can't be, this is a bad marriage. My mother used to say she stayed involved with him because of me. And I'm thinking, well, if it's because of me, leave. But when it comes time, they were together about 13, 17 years. When it comes time to leave, it's still painful. So, yeah, it was reflected in my schoolwork. I started ditching. I'm smoking weed. I don't even like weed. You know, I'm taking Valium. I don't even like Valium. You know, oh, Jesus. I'm just like, oh, how do you get through this? And so the counselor called me in, and I remember the look on her face, which was, you know, really worried around what happened. What happened? And I remember just having no words. I had no idea how to express it at all, you know, and that was a turning point for me, because it told me right there that, you know, I must have a problem with both with communication, with self-expression, you know, a whole lot of different stuff, but to actually have someone care enough to ask what's significant and not be able to answer was just like, oh, my God. So anyway, after a while, I and some of my high school friends, junior high school friends, one of them got pregnant. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I mean, you know, 13 and 14 and pregnant? Oh, my God, you know. And so that was the other thing, too. Around this time, it was a law passed that you did not need your parents' permission for contraceptives. So I went and got myself on contraceptives because I'm like, this can't happen. Hell, I'm still trying to figure out how to grow up myself, you know. And I remember turning, and that was one of the significant turning points for me, is that looking at the fact that I could possibly, you know, get pregnant and drop out. The two things I felt that was expected of me as a black woman anyway wasn't going to happen. So eventually I began to turn myself around, got back on the dean's list. By the time I'm a junior, it was a slow climb. I went from jumping from F's now to D's to C's, which was okay because I knew I was on my way back. And I realized, too, and this is kind of my thinking, that, you know, the only person's name that's going to be on that diploma is not Dean's, not Paul's, and not my brother's. That's yours. So I'm going to do this. And that's what happened. So I did graduate. I made the dean's list. I'm telling you, what did I tell you? I told you I was a teenage alcoholic, right? So I made the dean's list when I was a senior in high school. I used to go to school hungover. I used to turn in paperwork. Did not remember doing that. I remember one time I turned in something and I didn't have my name on it, which was indicative of how I lived in a blackout. Teacher asked, you know, somebody's paper's up here. Nice handwriting. And I do. I have nice handwriting. It's nice handwriting, but there's no name on it. I was so freaking embarrassed. Like, I don't want anybody to know. It might be me. I slithered up there, you know, and it was my paper. And even though that's not a real big deal, the fact that I know I'm drinking really kind of illuminates that to me. Like, you're turning in shit and you don't even know what the hell it is, you know? Jesus. Whew. Yeah, I did. I got a damn good grade. Eventually we moved back to, I was in Fairbanks, Alaska. My father worked on the pipeline. And eventually we moved back to California and I was proceeding in my alcoholic career. My mother was just humiliated, horrified, did not know what to do. I remember one time I fell asleep on the porch. I've always been afraid of the dark, been afraid of my own shadow, been afraid of your shadow, been afraid of dogs, been afraid of cats, been afraid of, you know, birds, you know, the birds. Remember the movie The Birds? Anybody in here? Okay, so, you know, just afraid. Just ad infinitum. Shit, anything. Or just afraid. And so I thought I had gotten the house. I was in a blackout. I fell asleep on the front porch. My mother came home petrified. I could see in her eyes. She thought I was dead. And I thought to myself, damn, I thought I got inside the house. That is, I'm telling you, I'm also by this time, you know, 16, 17 years old. I'm falling more at 16 and 17 because I'm drunk than I ever did as a kid. I was a damn good athlete. I didn't fall. You take pride in not falling. Now I'm falling all the damn time. You know, I gave up high heel shoes. I gave up anything that looks like it pertained to being a girl, because in the end, I was going to be up in the bushes somewhere, toe up from the flow up, you know, legs up in the air. So I didn't have time for all that pretty stuff, you know. And and moving back, my mother sent me back to Fairbanks, and, you know, and that's where I met a young man who I married. Why not? I finished high school, right? Why not get married? Doesn't make sense, right? Anyway, and you know, and I say that what they say when I met Rufus, the promises came true, right? Okay. And what I also did was I turned my will and my life over to the care of Rufus, as I understood him, because I knew I was a piss in the pants drunk. I peed in my pants routinely. I was trying not to drink when I met him, trying. Yeah, you know, now, see, I don't like that term, white knuckle. What the fuck is that? But I'm trying to hold on to not drinking. And then he comes along and offers me a drink. Of course he does. That makes sense to me, ladies. That makes sense to me. That's a tool. You know, you get drunk and you just have your way with folks, right? It's a, you know, I'm thinking, oh, he's nice, but yeah, at the same time, I'm also aware of the fact that I'm alcoholic. And if he sees me drunk, there ain't going to be no second time because, Lord. Anyway, and so you know what? the next day, I did drink. I was a mess and running all over the building, acting like a damn fool. And that's the other thing my stepdad, he said, you're a running drunk. And I sure am. You know, I don't sit down and be quiet and nod. I wish I could. You know, I get drunk, it's time to go. Shit, you know, so, oh Lord, so. So he and I, we got married, of course, why not? And the only reason why I married him is because I was going to get drunk and I needed somebody to take care of me. He said I do, and so we did, you know? Jesus. And no love in there at all. In fact, I mean, I'm already planning. Boy, I tell you what, I can't wait to divorce your ass on the way to the courthouse to get married. Doesn't that make sense? Anyway, I had been to AA before at 15. I told my mother, who had asked me, you know, Monique, what is wrong with you? Why, how come you're always drunk? All your friends and people, everybody else, you know, they don't get drunk like you. I couldn't answer that. And I figured it out. You know, I figured out I was alcoholic. And so, and I told my mother this. I said, you know, mother, I must be alcoholic. Because when I take a drink, the drink takes me. Yeah. You take the drink. The drink takes the drink. And then the drink takes you. And now I'm drinking even when I don't want to. Oh, you gonna be sober today? Oh, we got something for you. I wrote hot checks all the time. You don't do that shit now. But back then, they were rubber as hell. You know, like they say, oh, you know what they say. I must have money. I still have checks, right? So. Anyway. So, look at this, times. And I told myself, I'm going to tell you guys, I told myself, I am going to break this shit down because 40 minutes is a long time. And they were talking about chapter 3 and 5 and the treasure. I said, take your time. Read the whole damn book if you want to. Oh, my God. Now I'm like, oh, I got to hurry up. I'm running out of time. Anyway. So eventually I did come to AA. I had been introduced to AA at 15. I went in there. They were all old people. Now I'm one of them. And, shit, damn, what happened? Anyway, and, all old white men, tell you the truth. Everybody smoked back there in the meetings. And, you know, I was like, I can't do that. Look at all these old damn ass white men. I just ain't even safe. Shit. You know, so. This is not even safe. Anyway, So AA didn't work, and then, you know, I come back around in 1981. I've gone to a couple of meetings in between. I'm well aware of the fact, this is Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm well aware of the fact that, you know, one of these days they're going to find me in a ditch. You know, really, I'm going to have, you know, what do they call that, permafrost or ice bite or whatever the hell you call it, frostbite. It's been a long time since I've been in Alaska. I can't remember what you call it. And, you know, and you're just going to be Jane Doe number 2. Shit, you know, I can't do this. And so I went to AA, and Rufus was asked by Lucia, and I felt like Lucia. Lucia said, you're going to go home with me. And I said, oh, shit, she think I'm drunk, and she's trying to get at me. I haven't been hit on before. You ain't that damn drunk, you know, so... And so she asked Rufus, and I'm thinking, well, he don't say no, you know, because he needs me at home. This is what I used to say, he needs me at home to F up his life. See how much better I'm getting? Anyway, and so I looked at Rufus, and he looked at me, pathetic. You ever had that look where people look at you and it's just, you are pathetic. God. And he said, and I don't really think he wanted her to take me home. I think he just wanted to have authority over me. He said, yeah, you can take her home. I'm like, you bitch. Anyway, but you're powerless. You're powerless because you're drunk. You know, me and my aunt used to get drunk together. We used to say, a drunk ain't shit as we passed each other, you know, old English and Schlitzball looking. Drunk ain't shit, you know. And Lucia took me home, and I'm like, I got to keep my eye on this one, because she ain't getting none of this. This ain't, I don't swing both ways. I ain't mad at those who do, but I'm just here to get drunk. That's all I want to do, right? And so Lucia says to me, you know, Monique, what are your priorities? What are my priorities? What the hell is she talking about? She said, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk, and keep the plug in the jug. I'm like, that does not make sense to me. Why would I buy a jug and keep the plug in it? I'm like, I said, she ain't trying to get at me. She's crazy. And this is my story. This is universal because it's the truth. She's crazy. Why would I, you know, 90 meetings and 90, if I could do 90 damn meetings, what the hell do I need you people for? You know, and she said, and your priorities are God first, sobriety second, and Monique third. She said, because if you don't have those first two things in order, there is no Monique. Damn. And that made sense. Here's the other thing. So, you know, she gave me a big book. That's the only reason why I know my sobriety date. That's the only reason she did. Back then, they kept extra copies. I don't know if folks do that now. They got detox centers and all this stuff now. But, you know, she had an extra book. She gave it to me. She wrote in there, remember your priorities and the basics of the program. And she wrote Lucia. 9/19/81. Damn. I remember looking at that book maybe 3 months later with a good coffee holder, you know, and, you know, read it. What am I going to do that for? Anyway, and I looked at that date and I said, is that what day it was? I had no idea. Isn't that wonderful? 9/19/81. And the next day, you know, I was really planning my escape, you guys. I can't do this. That's a beautiful thing she's talking about. That's good for you people. But for me, I got to finish this drunk. If you're telling me I don't have to drink anymore, let me just finish this drunk and then I'll come back, you know. And I planned my escape, and her children were on it. They said, Mama, Monique is leaving, you know, and she tied me down. So I'm like, they done had some damn drunks here before. So anyway, and the next day, I got to tell you this, and I'm out of time. Okay, the next day, here's the deal. The next day, Lucia asked Monique, what are your priorities? I said, 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't take the first drink. And keep the plug in the jug. And I'm here to tell you that I have not found it necessary to take a drink ever since then. And that is by the grace of God. Oh, my God. And let me also say this, because I think sometimes we get caught up in all of this time and shit. You know what I mean? Let me also say this, that even if I drink tonight, let's be very clear, it still isn't necessary. And that's what this program gives you. It gives you a power of choice. That's what it gives you. The only thing that's changed is that before this program, I had to pick up, and now I don't. And with that one action, it changed everything. Everything. I get to go through menopause today. I get to be an old lady. I used to say this, that, you know, back when I was drinking, better watch out. Because, hell, you know, that's one reason why I quit driving and drinking. I was scared I was going to kill you. I wasn't scared about killing me, but I was scared I was going to kill you. Now that I'm an old lady, you still better watch out. But it ain't because I'm drunk, it's because I'm old, right? So, shit. And people talk about that. I lose my car all the damn time. Can't never find my keys. Don't know where my phone is, but I ain't drunk. I am not drunk. So let me just, now I want to wrap up real quick. The other thing is that I have gone through the steps. I had my first sponsor. She was assigned to me. Thank you, because I did not have enough courage to ask anybody. I was already self-rejected. There's no fucking way I'm going to ask you and you tell me no. Fuck that. So, you know, and so, you know, Lucia, Penny is your sponsor because she's married and you're married. Thank you. You know, and I got to tell you, through the power of this program, it wasn't too long ago. I did pretty good up to this point, huh? I see. Anyway, through the power of this program, maybe 3-4 months ago, through an internet, Betty Pesca is her name. Betty still lives in Fairbanks. And Betty was sober, I think she told me, 40, 45, 45 years. Still sober in this program. Oh, wasn't that wonderful? Wow. Woo. The book talks about you'll have lifelong friends. It's people who normally would not mix. All of my relationships, everything I got, even the awareness of my defects, whatever they may be, my language. In fact, I will tell you that I did really good tonight too, but I used to curse a lot, and it was my only defense. I could not fight because I was too freaking drunk. See, I did good. Anyway, and after a while, when I got too drunk, I couldn't even run because I'm a runner. You know what I mean? So then I had to learn how to talk shit just to try to save myself. That's what that was about. And so when I got 6 months sober, the guy in the program, I forgot his name, I think Jerry Fierce, he said, Monique, you're a young lady now. You need to clean up your mouth. It doesn't look very favorable in this program that you have such bad language. And I remember I lamented over that. I agonized over that. I was really hurt by that because I really, by this time, wanted what you had. And if it meant now, so after about 2 weeks of lamenting over that, I went to Betty and I said, Betty, do I need to quit cursing? And I was really ready to surrender because the life that I've been given, to give up a few swear words, let's do it. We got to work on it. We're going to do it. And so Betty, her nickname in the program was Bubble, she said, Monique, God does not listen to your mouth. He listens to your heart. And I used to say, I've been a cursing mofo ever since. So Betty also took me to the steps. Betty said, Monique, I'll be glad when you find yourself. I say out loud to you all that, that I am a black woman as I look around this room. That is significant because it's indicative of how this program crosses all that shit. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? It really wasn't designed for people like me. But the power of God, because it was like a microcosm of the world. White, middle class, middle-aged men. Not women, and certainly not black women. And for a period of my recovery, I was doing a lot of speaking, which is one reason why I really, a lot of speaking. And I can see now, as I look at the demographics of our program, why I was asked. People used to say, oh, you're so funny, you're so funny. And I'm like, hell, it's just my story. But the thing is that this is one reason why it's important to come up here, because the message that I was given, and one of my friends in L.A. says this all the time, she says, women do recover. Woo! And I'm looking around here, and I'm looking at all these women. Yes! Yes! And the same thing I hated about being a woman is the same thing that brought me to my knees. Because I got to thinking, when you get drunk and people can't have your way, I don't care how much shit you talk, you still got a coochie. You know what I mean? And I'm like, we can't, no. So, anyway, and I'm so grateful for that. So I guess that's the main thing I'm going to say, is that the very things that I thought were the worst about me, turn out to be the best. I love that when we talk about we're working on our defects of character, it clearly says, ask God to remove them. Because, and then my cousin would say, let God be God. So the very things that I thought were the worst about me turn out to be the best. That's how God works. And the things that I think are just so horrible, like being a drunk, is the best thing that ever happened. Let me say this, that this program offers you hope. And I hope there was something that I said to someone that made a difference. When I love the acronyms, and I was thinking about hope, and the hope is hearing other people's experience. And so to get me out of the way just for a minute and say to you that you too can recover. It says, burn into the consciousness of every man that he can recover. That's the message I want to give tonight. And for that, I'm truly grateful, and I'm going to keep coming back.